All right, welcome everyone. Can everybody hear me?
Yep. We got somebody in the audience. Can you hear?
Is the PA working?
I think so. I
heard that.
Okay. Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Planning Commission workshop for Thursday, November 2nd, 2023 at 4 p.m. I call this meeting to order. First order of business is determination of a quorum. We have five commissioners present. Therefore, we do have a quorum. Adoption of the agenda is the next item. Do I hear a motion to adopt this afternoon's agenda?
I'll motion to adopt the agenda.
Do I hear a second?
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Visitor communication. This is the time provided for individuals wishing to address the Planning Commission regarding issues not already on the agenda. Would you like to speak on anything that's not on the agenda, Stephanie? Okay. Thank you for being here. All right. Excellent. And moving along, approval of minutes. Do I hear a motion to approve minutes September 21st, 2023, Exhibit A?
I move that we approve the minutes from September 21st, 2023, Exhibit A.
And do I hear a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. And on to the work session. We'll go ahead and turn it over to staff.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome, commissioners and member of the public. We're excited to have this work session today with you on a topic that we just don't get a whole lot of, to spend a whole lot of time talking about. And it's important enough that we should spend a decent amount of time discussing. And appreciate you guys as commissioners pushing this topic to the forefront. You know, we've had a busy last several years, if not more. Projects these days tend to seem like they generate a lot of community involvement, and that's what we desire. We desire them for our land use applications. We really desire them for our long-range planning projects. And so we want to talk a little bit about today about what we do, why it's important, and really look for your thoughts and recommendations. Why is it important and why are we talking about it? Well, we're not only we think it's important just to, you know, as a good practice, it's a component and a requirement of our statewide planning program. The first goal of statewide planning is community involvement. And I think that is not by accident. I think it's by, factoring in how important that public involvement is to the land use planning program. Further implemented in our comprehensive plan in our section one, I think it is, we call it something different. We call it public involvement instead of community involvement, but it's the same thing that has a bunch of goals, objectives, and policies. And there's some good information in there and some good guidance in those policies were generated by public input that we received during the comprehensive plan. And it's always good to check back into those policies to see what are we doing good and what can we improve upon. Going on the next slide, this is a kind of a summary of what the Oregon Land Use Goal for Citizen Involvement says is develop a citizen involvement program that ensures the opportunity for citizens to be involved in all phases of the planning process. Opportunities for widespread public involvement, effective two-way communication with the public, the ability for the public to be involved in all phases of the planning process, making technical information easy to understand, feedback mechanisms for policymakers to respond to public input, and adequate financial support for public involvement efforts. So those statewide planning goals, as I mentioned, were brought forward into our comprehensive plan, which has many of these themes apparent and fundamentally represented in our comprehensive plan, and then just fine-tuned for our community specifically. So if you could go to the next slide, please. So that's our comprehensive plan. On the screen there are two policies we want to highlight, but they're just two of many policies in our Section 1 public involvement. And we did include that into your staff packet, and hopefully you got a chance to take a look at that. But there's a lot of recommendations in here, some themes about, things we can do to elevate public involvement, things we can do to break down barriers. The overarching goal of public involvement in our comprehensive plan is to offer a wide variety of traditional and contemporary tools and opportunities to enable and empower a diverse population of residents, business owners, private organizations, and partner agencies located inside and outside city limits to participate in all land use processes. So as you go through, there's themes that kind of jump out at you, trying to reach specifically those kind of populations that aren't typically represented in our planning process, the ones that may be unfamiliar with the process or don't have the time to participate in the process. That's a big thing. Yeah, it's a big element. You have to have the time and the ability to participate in these meetings. We think that we've made it easier by offering the opportunity to participate virtually. That's been a huge improvement, I think, in the opportunity to engage with your public agencies. But really the most important theme that we want to kind of hammer or hone in on today is these policies up on the screen. And to remind you, you probably already know this, but that the Planning Commission is our community involvement committee. Community Involvement Committee and the implementer of the Community Involvement Program. So the Planning Commission shall seek multiple methods to support and cultivate additional new and ever-expanding community involvement opportunities, including working directly with a diversity of organizations to amplify opportunities for involvement. And policy 1.1.2 is basically what we're looking to get out of this meeting from the Planning Commission is an evaluation of our public involvement tools and processes that we currently use, and recommendations for improving the program. And those improvements, those recommendations would go forward to City Council and to make them aware, and improvements that they can in turn direct staff to implement. So in order to enable you to be able to do that evaluation, we're going to review the tools that we use currently in our code for our different types of land use applications, and then also for our larger community-wide projects, such as the comprehensive plan update and some of the tools we used with that project. Some of you were involved with that, but we'll give you a little refresher on those tools that we do use. And then hopefully after that, give you guys an opportunity to evaluate what we do and identify areas that we can improve upon. So we're looking forward to hearing your thoughts. So I'll turn it over to Matt, and he's gonna talk about a component of the outreach that we do with land use applications.
Thank you, Scott. Matthew Martin, City of Sisters Community Development Department. Yeah, so what I wanna cover today is kind of the nuts and bolts, what's in our code that we have prescribed in facilitating that opportunity for community and public involvement in our processes. Some of this comes down from the state level through state law that dictates how our process begins and ends ultimately with potential appeals through our processes. But I know that you are a branch of that review process through the Type 3 reviews. And just want to acknowledge what we have in our code today to disseminate information and solicit public involvement and collaboration through the land use process. So I guess I'll start with, we have our four types of review that have various notice and public hearing and other requirements. But through all of that, there's opportunity to engage. So from the time the application is submitted, there's that chance and opportunity for the public to inquire about where applications are and participate in the prescribed way. Through all of this, you'll see that there are appeal opportunities with all four types of land use application types. you know, that is fundamentally a public involvement opportunity for the community to continue to engage if there's a disagreement. That's general public or the applicant, if you disagree with a decision that was made. Certainly, we don't want to lean on the appeal being that kind of that opportunity, but I just want to acknowledge that built into each one of these types is a public involvement opportunity. So just want to highlight each one of the types and kind of what's generally within those processes that are within our development code today. So type one, those are ministerial reviews done by staff. More or less, or a different way of describing that is a checklist review. These are decisions that don't require discretion. So the idea is, does it meet a numeric or a specific criteria in the code? And if so, check, it meets that. Therefore, the notice and lack of discretion doesn't warrant those kind of the broadly kind of facilitating and soliciting comment from the public. So no notices on those. That's where simply decisions issued to the applicant. But certainly, again, the applicant or any party may, if they so choose, appeal that straight to the State Land Use Board of Appeals. Type two, that's an administrative review done by staff. This is where we start to build in those notice and procedural elements that really begin to engage the public. So with a type two decision, we mail notice to notice of application is a fundamental and initial step in any process for a type two decision. And those are our site plan reviews, our minor variances, minor conditional uses. Those that aren't perceived to have a broader or a greater impact on the community that may warrant a public forum for the decision making. But that's not to diminish. And one takeaway I want you as commissioners and the community to understand is that that when we have these notices and solicit public comments, we value those. Those written comments carry as much weight as oral comments to staff in any process. If staff's reviewing that decision or making that decision or providing that staff report to the commission or the council to render their final decisions. So above all, written comments in the record are valued and encouraged. So with notice of application, we send mailed notice to surrounding property owners within 250 feet. Also included are those agencies that may be affected, that being our internal city departments or the fire district, Oregon Department of Transportation, Oregon Department of Aviation, Department of Environmental Quality, or any of those that may have an interface with a particular project, and solicit that comment from them. In addition, an individual may see an application but not have a particular comment at the offset. They can simply say in writing, request notices throughout a project. So they may not have feel strongly that they just want to monitor it throughout. So they can simply request that it be a notice be provided to them. Staff renders that decision. Then there's notice of decision that goes out to those same applicant owner, participants or parties to the record, and those agencies that did participate. So it closes that loop of public participation. So throughout that entire review process, those comments that are received, again, maybe hammering that point home, are considered and reviewed in their entirety to see where there's an interface with the development review criteria and how or if the project does meet the criteria as either proposed or if that objection or comment of support is relevant or may, you know, sway a particular finding on a criteria. And then, of course, we send that notice to the Planning Commission of those staff type two decisions so that you can stay in that loop. So that's a kind of a broader web that we try to cast to capture not only you as the Citizen Involvement Committee, but also the community surrounding the project area. And what you'll notice as part of those kind of backing up from mailed notice, we also have a posted notice requirement. So I have the sign on the screen. We have a prop here in the room, as you may have seen these yellow signs throughout the community on a particular property. What that is just a visual reference, another tool from the mailed or other ways to get the word out on projects. And so if you're coming by a property, you see this sign on it, that's a notice that something's going on and an opportunity to inquire and participate as you so choose. Then we move to type three. The processes are all but identical in that the notices of application to surrounding property owners, the applicant, affected agencies, and posted notice are all requirements. But the review process changes, as you know. With type three, the Planning Commission is that review body. And so these notices that go out are not notices of application, but rather notice of that public hearing to let folks know that this project's coming forward and when the public hearing is taking place. Here's another drumbeat that those written comments that come in prior to the public hearing are invaluable to staff instead of just reserving any comments until the public hearing. Not to say that oral comments don't carry similar or same weight. Having comments submitted well in advance of the public hearing gives the opportunity to staff to really evaluate and incorporate those comments into the staff report that is required to be prepared a week in advance of the public hearing. So absent having those comments in advance, there's limited opportunity to really evaluate those. So early and often, I guess maybe a phrase that applies here. We work our way through staff report, Planning Commission decision. Those notices go out to a similar package of individuals that have participated or parties to the record. And then we forward on that decision by the Planning Commission to the City Council as a similar opportunity to stay informed of where the actions by the Planning Commission and decide if they have an interest in elevating and initiating review. The fourth and final type of review is a legislative review. That is our changes to code, zoning, et cetera, that has a citywide impact. So again, zone changes, text amendments to the development code, amendments to the comprehensive plan. This has a very different process in that it's not a subject property specific. But we do mail notices of those applications in advance that because it's going directly to a public hearing. An extra step is that a requirement of state law is that we send notice to the Department of Land Conservation and Development to keep them in the know of what we're doing here at a local level. That's kind of elevating to where the state is now part of the public involvement arm of what we're doing here locally. Similar notices after a decision is rendered by the City Council after the Planning Commission has their makes their recommendation to them. So really just wanted to kind of give you a general overview to hopefully impress upon you that we have various tools that we utilize for public process, from mailed to posted. I did overlook and do want to identify or recognize that we do have published notice requirements for any public hearings that we have coming before the Planning Commission and City Council. So just again, trying to cast that wider net and use different methods to reach the broader community that we can, the broadest community we can, that to make sure that people are informed and have that and know of the opportunity to participate if they feel
it would probably
an interest.
There were something else in the paper other than just the blurb in the classified ads, like maybe a short article or an ad, you know, a bigger ad space that people would notice. So if you really want to get people involved in a hearing, in a certain hearing.
Yeah, and that's valuable input, and I think it's identifying where those, if we need to consider changing our prescribed code or simply use the Nugget or newspaper or other media outlets as an opportunity to more broadly cast that net. I think in ad, we could elevate that to administration if that's something we're wanting to do. Thinking about with an article, we certainly have a good working relationship with the Nugget, and there's that chance to either send more information if it's through a press release or a direct contact to and say, here's
the article here. Might explain things in plain language, which would be easier for people to understand than, you know, some of the terms that we use in planning.
Sure. And that note is something that does have an impact on me, is make sure that we're describing the information and the process in a clear way so that everybody understands the rules of engagement, you know, to say it differently, not what, as I regurgitate code through this process. I do want to be, but working with the media and the press, want to be mindful of their independence as well as us, but certainly can be some level of collaboration in that department. And we did get, you know, with a couple of projects most recently that I worked on with Sunset Meadows, or if it's with Space Age, there was certainly that coverage that kept folks informed of where we're at and where we're headed with the process. So that's the value of having a good, strong, and highly circulated newspaper here in a small community. So I appreciate those comments.
And Matt, how much input does the applicant have with respect to the information that's published and the format in which it's published? So, for example, if somebody comes in with a Type 3 master plan application, you guys say, well, we're gonna write an article about this. Does the applicant have the ability to say, no, you're not. You're going to just post it like you do all the other ones?
So that's the tricky relationship with, you know, any kind of written or press publication related to an application. You know, on our side, on our particular notices, we have our prescribed, I keep saying that word, we have requirements within our code of what the information that's required within the notices, you know, how it's presented on the notices. We do have some discretion. So with respect to our formal notices, there is no input, no specific input from the applicant. We use a standardized format with the information that's required to be provided in there. But I see the potential issue that could arise from a particular article that may be coming from a one perspective and maybe not another. That would be important.
And we don't initiate the articles. It's usually, if there's an article, it's initiated by the press, and we hope that they get a, you know, a balanced view on things by not only asking us what's going on, but getting in touch with the applicant. They do a pretty good job. They don't always get both perspectives, but it's not something that we use as a tool, and then we initiate it just, you know, from our side. It's usually like, there are some exceptions to that, like for long range planning projects where we would probably go out of our way to alert the nugget to get the word out when it's a more of a community wide kind of policy kind of thing. But we're not doing that generally with land use applications.
Also, in our procedures ordinance is an opportunity or a discussion of neighborhood meetings. As you'll see, when highlighting the language, you know, it starts off by indicating that city encourages applicants to meet with abutting property owners or community neighborhood representatives to introduce a project in advance of making an application. I've found in my experience that this can be an incredibly effective tool for an applicant outside of any formal city process to sit down and reach out to those neighbors to get the layout, kind of general or the specifics of a proposal, and provide an opportunity for that conversation, that input in advance of that application formally being submitted to the city. That's a chance for concerns or issues or support can be garnered regarding an application, so that an applicant can either make some revisions to their project to be perhaps more accommodating or palatable to the community, or if not, they'll have an understanding of what those concerns that the community may have moving into the formal process. So while it's encouraged, it's not a formal requirement at this point in requiring those neighborhood meetings.
But it says it may be required. Has anybody ever done that?
So as you noted and highlighted here is that that the community development director or designee could require an applicant to go through that process and hold a formal neighborhood meeting. I personally, in my projects, have not engaged in that process.
No, not since I've been here. I think some applicants have maybe done it on their own accord, but we haven't invoked that as of yet. It's something that we are reconsidering and understanding that that is an effective tool that we should be utilizing more. And it may just be a matter of, you know, what's the policy in terms of what kind of applications would we require, to be consistent. So that's maybe something that we'd like to hear from you guys more. It's in the code, it's a tool we can use, but let's give it a little bit more flesh on the bone in terms of how we utilize it. Would be helpful to hear from you guys.
Can you think of an example in which you may require the applicant to meet with fellow property owners?
I can. The Heavenly Acres, the changing of the zoning, where they wanted to change it to multifamily, right? Multifamily.
From UAR to either multifamily or public facility. Yeah. We did do some outreach there because we knew that was going to be an issue, but we did it in a different way where we contacted them directly, the property owners, to inform them of this process. But certainly master plans would be one that would immediately jump to mind because those are typically the largest developments we see.
The McKinsey, what is it, McKinsey Meadows?
Hayden's?
The new one.
Sunset Meadows?
Sunset Meadows. That would have been, it seems like, a really good one to require a meeting with the neighbors.
Right.
Because it kind of happened afterwards.
Exactly.
Yes, so I think what Scott's touching on is master plans. I think you're looking at, and we haven't identified that magic application type or size, but master plans or a particular land division of particular acreage or number of lots, if that's over 5 acres in size, or if it's 50 lots, I'm just putting numbers out there, or with a site plan review that is of square footage in excess of 4,000, 5,000 square feet of building or footprint. Think about conditional uses. Those are uses that have either unique conditions that are applied to those and or criteria, or we're looking at compatibility associated with those conditional uses. And so that may be one of those that may warrant that kind of initial engagement with neighbors to understand more about the project and have a chance to answer those questions in a more informal pre-application forum instead of where we're most often presented, either in events or the public forum that we have here at public hearings with you.
Yeah, I could see that process working pretty well. If the city evolves to where you have neighborhood committees, cooperatives, whatever you title it, it would make it that much easier. At least you'd know who they need to have a meeting with us, and like you said, then there would probably be a standard process,
right?
Signs, et cetera, when you do it.
Yeah, and with this be, this standard, as I'm pointing to that, with it being not detailed, it gives us a chance to establish internal policies. Or if we want to go further and adopt some specific criteria, we certainly can do that. But this gives us a chance to create some internal policies to apply this kind of encouraged type of and may require type of standard. That gives us actually some flexibility, but we want to have some type of general framework instead of trying to avoid an arbitrary application of, well, we want you to have a meeting. Oh, you're exactly the same. We're not going to do that. We don't want to get in that.
Since we don't have, neighborhood associations here in Sisters, a tool that I've seen in other communities use is just a certain radius, kind of like how we notify people of land use applications, a certain radius around the property. We could establish a 250 feet or 500 feet or however that's structured to get people who are could be materially or affected by this property or by this development to be able to get them involved early on. And the developer would actually be responsible for sending out the notice to get of the date of the meeting and holding the meeting. So there's precedence for that that we could incorporate here pretty easily.
I think it's important to make sure that this meeting, that it's clear to the people that are having the meeting that they don't get to tell the person that has a property what they have to do. It's the applicant would just be hearing it, because may require the applicant to meet with them may lead people to think like the applicant has to do what they're telling them they want them to do or don't want them to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, this is language right here. It's sticky language.
Yeah.
It's compromising for sure. I mean, you know, everything we do is technical, and this is a totally subjective thing. And you either require it or, and, you know, they should, but is it the city's place to tell a property owner that they have to engage with the public with respect to doing something on their property that they have the right to do
under this language? Yeah, understood. Well, excellent feedback, and that may be something we consider, and I look to our director to elevate it, and if we prioritize some type of amendment to this and really, you know, standardize it and establish when, how, what way we would be having these requiring this kind of meeting. What kind of information is presented? You know, what kind of documentation of what's presented and who was contacted? You know,
it's great to have the flexibility to be able to do this. And I totally see the value there, but there's a flip side to it too.
My limited experience on this planning commission has been when we're having some of these hearings, we take an awful lot of comments about the staff and the city council and the planning commission cramming stuff down people's throats. Like, you know, here's another project and we're just okaying it, we're rubber stamping it. And so given that kind of a meeting where neighbors in that area of a development would be able to meet with the developer and explain, and he's going to explain what he's going to do, like in the case of the, was it Sunset Meadows over there behind Bi-Mart, where they were really concerned because there was no buffer between them and this new development. And it looks like they got a little bit of a buffer, but I mean, that stuff can be solved way ahead of time, because, you know, I don't think we're cramming anything down anybody's throat. It's just people.
Well, and some developers are better than others.
And they don't, well, people don't choose to read or get informed or look on the website or look for the notices in the paper that there's an upcoming hearing.
Yeah. Excellent input. I appreciate all that.
Yeah, once neighborhoods seem to be more organized into zones or areas, they will become more, you know, the group as a whole will become more educated to how the process functions. And then this could actually, for the applicant, could, you know, if they're doing a Sunset Meadows, it actually might be really helpful.
Would they?
To hear it.
But they, I think that the biggest thing I have is, yes, they should engage in community involvement before the application is submitted, you know, and we've seen the difference between developments that have done that, like the Woodlands. They did a great job in getting people on board before the application was submitted. And then by the time we heard the application and made our decision, it was pretty much, it was already, everybody was on board. There was total buy-in by the community. And then Clear Pine was similar to that. It was a little rockier, but the developer spent 2 years getting people in Trapper Creek on board. Were you on for that, Chris? And it was a process. And there was a lot of concessions that were made and a lot of haggling that was going on during our planning commission hearings, which these days that probably wouldn't happen. But in those days, you know, that was just business as usual. But and then we've experienced a few different ones, like Hayden is kind of notorious for not being real open with respect to other neighborhoods. And, you know, it's been the tougher hearings that we've experienced where there's been less community outreach.
Yeah, and then people feel like they're blindsided by the developer.
Anyway, yeah.
No, you've touched on many of the issues that have come to staff's mind and how to facilitate a good, robust, constructive process throughout. And just in closing comments, what I've highlighted is what we have in our code. You know, and we have some modest additional notices that we try to and do offer is posting application notice of application and decision here at City Hall on the bulletin board. I have at the post office regularly. And on the city's website. So there's a tracking tool there for any and all folks to check in regularly to see what kind of activity we're seeing just on a citywide if you're outside of that mailed notice area, but you still have broader interest. We have a clearinghouse for that information too. So just using those different techniques to get that word out, which may appear limited to some folks if it's, well, why just 250 feet or why just a sign on the property or why a legal notice in the nugget. The strategy is to get some out and then let the community kind of spread the word. I mean, that's just an efficient way to get that word out. It's been effective in throughout my career. So I'll leave it at that and pass it to Emmy.
Hi, my name is Emmy Shoup, Associate Planner. I wanted to talk about the community engagement tools that we do get to use when we get to these long-range planning projects, which would be our Type 4 text amendments, master plans like water, wastewater, park master plans, and the comprehensive plan. So I think most of you were here for that comprehensive plan update. Tom Reese, Chris Converse, I think you were the appointed liaisons for our groups.
I think it was Jeff.
Or Jeff.
I don't think it was.
It was Jeff.
Oh, okay. Sorry for forgetting.
Art, you were on it. You were on a community advisory.
Oh, it was okay. Yeah. You were one of the liaisons. So it's great when we get to do these long range planning projects because we're not as restricted to the noticing procedures that Matt described for our type 1, 2, and 3 types of projects. This is we get to be more creative and have greater effort into our community outreach because these long-range planning projects have a citywide impact. And it's a great opportunity to get the community aware and invited to be involved so that they can provide guidance on that that final piece of code or master plan that we are making a decision on. So some recent long-range planning projects would be the Seekers Country Vision, Comprehensive Plan, the Housing and Land Efficiency Measures Project, which we just adopted some new code from that project just this last spring. And currently we're working on the text amendments for dark sky standards. And that's an ongoing community outreach and process that we're going through now. Some communication tools that we're able to use for these long-range planning projects are, you know, the city website. We can put out announcements or create project-specific web pages so that anyone from the public can access those resources and materials at their convenience. We have e-notifications so that people get automated emails for notices of meetings, different pertinent topics that the city's posting on the website. We also have the standard paper outreach with utility mailers that we send out, nugget articles, press releases, and posting agendas, as well as we have our social media. We have the city Facebook, but I don't think it's a very well-utilized tool or well-received tool in this community specifically. As part of long-range planning, we want to reach out to the community and get their input because that's really valuable data that informs us and the product that we're trying to develop. So this could be done through open houses, both done in person, and during COVID, we had to get creative and we were able to have virtual open houses. Surveys, you know, for the past couple of years that I've been working here doing community engagement, I hear from our consultants that we're one of the most engaged communities on our surveys. You know, we'll get almost like 45% engagement, which is pretty high compared to other communities that our consultants work in. Again, emphasizing the written record, it's great when we get public comments, letters, things submitted to us that we have that we can refer back to and cite on our as we develop our projects, as well as opportunities for passive engagement. So during COVID, this was a really fun way to kind of get people involved and to share their thoughts on the topics or certain prompts with the comprehensive plan without having staff or people to be face-to-face during a time when people were not allowed to be together. So in this case, people responded to the prompt, which was, what makes sisters sisters? What do you want sisters to be or have in 2040? People would write a little note on this piece of fabric and tie it to the community web. And it was just a fun way to get people engaged. Probably not the most effective form of outreach, but it's nice. And one of the best ways to get people engaged is to meet them where they're at or have opportunities for direct engagement. So for the comprehensive plan, we had the community and stakeholder advisory committees, which were held over Zoom. And this group of people were really important on, reviewing the data that we were compiling, setting priorities, looking at the policies that we were developing and kind of getting into the nitty gritty. And these people represented a wider breadth of people from the community. We also had our community engagement tabling sessions where we did little pop-up tabling at the farmer's market or at a park and tried to meet people where they were at, and which was fun. It's great to find opportunities to see people out and about. And I'd say one of the most effective tools that we used during the comprehensive plan were these community conversations. These were held entirely over Zoom, but it was a way to basically reach out to these local groups, nonprofits, organizations, or even classrooms with the high school and middle school and say, hey, you're all scheduled to be there already. Could we request to be put on the agenda and have an hour of your time? And during this time, it was COVID. People were like, sure, you know, we're happy to have you and have a discussion. So we would talk about the comprehensive plan, where we were at that point in time, and gather their input. And this seemed to be a really great way to touch a lot of different groups. And I think in trying to cover as many different groups as possible, those individuals then talk to the people that they know and further disseminate this information that we're sharing with them. So this was a really effective tool that we hope to use again for our future long-range planning projects. And here's some fun pictures from our in-person tabling events for the comprehensive plan. We had these little poster boards where people could come up and put on stickers and vote on, you know, what were their priorities and just have a person to talk to and ask questions of. So I'd like to open it up for discussion. You've let us talk for a while. So here are a couple examples of potential recommendations for us to consider. You know, I included a little YouTube video to an example of a fun social media outreach video that a local city of Sandy has used, but I don't feel the need to play it right now.
So again, we're looking for your guys. You got a little overview on what we do and our practices, and we think it works well for the most part, but it doesn't mean we can't be better. And you want to tap into some of your creative thoughts, some things that we're not thinking about that we like to see us pursue, and things we can report back to council on. So
I have a comment on this is anecdotal, this neighborhood meeting situation. So I've lived in Sisters almost 6 years. I came into Saddlestone Community HOA, and there were, out of the 83 homes, lots, there were probably 10 homes that were built at the time. So we had a lot of vacant lots. And in the last 2 years, we've done a complete build out. And now the HOA, we have our own board. It's no longer the developer, is no longer the board. But in that short period of time, we've got so many people that have moved into our neighborhood, and it seems like they're all a lot of them are upset with our HOA because we don't really have a meeting. Personally, our HOA doesn't have this meeting. So I don't hardly know any of the neighbors in my little development. So we're just going to plant, we're having a meeting, neighborhood meeting, not an HOA meeting, just to explain the history of Saddlestone's existence and since 2007 when it was first started. And just the few people that I've talked to and explained it to them, they're like all excited that we're having a meeting to discuss this. So it's my short-sightedness not realizing that I hadn't done anything about it, and their reluctance to ask anybody any questions. So I think the neighborhood meeting cops concept is a really great idea. And even for the planning commission and the city council and the planning department, people kind of want to know who've moved here, the history of the city and how long has it been since we first were here and when did they get the sewer system? And that's when the explosion of the population happened. And that's why we're growing, because people, you know, they don't know and they don't know where to ask questions. Because when we have planning commission meetings and we let the public talk, we don't say anything. We don't answer. And so I think there's, not that we should, I'm not saying that we should, but I mean, there's that people want to know about how this happened, why this happened. And
can I ask where you're holding that neighborhood meeting?
I think we're going to have it at the Five Creeks Lodge Conference Center. Okay. The library is not taking reservations yet, and the fire department's full.
You'll need a conditional use permit for that.
Have it in a bit.
So we're going to have the neighborhood meeting at 3:00, and then the board meetings, the annual board meeting is going to be at 4:00. So
yeah, and we're really curious about kind of the setting, the kind of the how you're drawing people together, and drawing them out.
And we're only going to send one board member to the meeting, and it's just going to be historical questions. If you want to have something to say to the board, you can do that at the board meeting. But I know there's a lot of people that are just confused about, you know, why do I get this notice that I'm not compliant because I leave my trash can out, and why, you know, am I not compliant because I keep parking my car in this place? And
sure.
So,
yeah. And build connections and a network within the neighborhood itself.
Yes. Or I'll right.
Relationships.
Well, maybe I can just get out of the HOA board. That would be great.
I think having more informal neighborhood meetings with council, with planning, the staff in a less formal atmosphere, where there's just Q&A opportunities for the public to be able to ask, why does it work like this? Almost like a fireside chat. That's been the overall feedback I've gotten from the community members. There's just a lot of misunderstanding and curiosity out there that just in our instant gratification and social media world, things get spun and people don't know what's right or what's wrong. So there's an opportunity there to kind of just set the record straight, so to speak, as to what the limitations are and what the history is. I mean, I'd be happy to go through and talk about the history of Sisters of the Last 20 years from a development standpoint. Probably answer a lot of people's questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A lot of changes.
Sounds like a good C4C event.
Totally.
Yeah.
You know, with some ground rules, of course.
Sure. Yeah.
You don't want to be putting the stocks.
Yeah.
Do you think it's helpful to look at the city map and make districts so that then they can have neighborhood association with, not like an HOA, but just that is where that group is being represented. And then they bring their grievances or their questions or their ideas in that format. And then when they come to the planning commission, they have consolidation in what they want to say, instead of having, you know, 10 people saying the exact same thing. You know, is that a better organized approach.
Well, I mean, it's not, nobody's stopping people from doing that. People could do that now. You know,
they could.
Yeah.
I mean, but I wonder if they need guidelines.
I completely, because we have an HOA that doesn't even do that.
Right. So I'm wondering if that's something the city might see as valuable, that you can develop these guidelines. I mean, I don't know. It's just a question out there.
Yeah.
Then when you have a developer coming in, they'll know which district or community neighborhood group that they're dealing with, that they need to speak to. And the people know, you know, they can all consolidate their information they want to input and their grievances or their ideas versus, you know, I mean, it seems more organized to me.
I think we should call them wards, not districts.
You like the word ward better?
That's all I have to say.
That's, hey, I think you can think of whatever, you know, something creative for sure. But I know in Bend, they were calling them districts. They had the Orchard District, the Larkspur District, this district. But, you know, that's a big place. They have a lot of districts. Does that seem more organized?
It's worth exploring, I think. I'm just surprised that city council hasn't just taken upon themselves to do this. Mm-hmm. As elected officials, it would behoove them to initiate this on their own and talk with their constituents and garner support from their constituents, listen to what they want. And it, just like what our state officials do and what our federal officials do, they come back to Oregon, they go around, they've got these town hall meetings and they find out what the issues are. Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously, city council should be doing this on an ongoing basis normally and talking to the public about what's going on. You know, that's what we hired them to do.
Right. But isn't this the goal of this work session is as the Committee for Community Involvement?
Well, I mean,
to evaluate them and the process and report its findings in writing to the City Council, along with recommendations.
We could recommend that.
Yeah, we could totally recommend it. Say you guys aren't doing your job. You need to get out there and do more neighborhood meetings.
That was Chair Seymour. That
on the record, for the record.
You know, like a bar, you know, a graph, you know, like a wrestling match, right? You start out with 10 people and they move down to 7, they move down to 5. And so, you know, you start out with this big neighborhood group and then they have their representatives that then they send to the meeting or whatever.
And I,
no,
sorry,
I don't know.
I think you're talking two different themes, one being neighborhood associations or districts, and the other is just general town hall meetings. Yeah.
Probably.
And you're speaking to public involved, you know, to get out to the community informally. So I recognize
both.
Yeah,
wouldn't hurt to have quarterly town hall meetings or whatever, monthly or however often.
I think to lend some template for organization might be to where in these areas, people, their neighborhoods, can organize.
Who's going to organize all this?
Educate. Well, see, I think you give the standards and the template, and they've got to organize. They've got to just, they're our ward now, and nobody's going to organize it for them. They have to organize it, or else they're not organized. They have a choice not to be organized.
Well, it's interesting that we were having a this work session to talk about this stuff. And it was published that we're having this workshop, wasn't it?
Yes.
And we have one visitor. So I think that's part of the disconnect in this day and age. People don't want to do those kinds of things. And if we did, where would I do it? In my neighborhood? You know, those are just the questions that they would all ask. Like,
oh, yeah.
All right. Well, no, go look what the city's making us do now. Now we have to get organized and organize our neighborhood.
Well, it's an option.
Oh, yeah, completely.
Yeah. I don't think city has time to go
around. I think, and I do, with Jeff's comments in mind, I think if the city council said, hey, we're going to have a neighborhood meeting for the southeast part of homeowners at city council meeting on Thursday night at 5:00, come and ask some questions, I think they'd get more people that would would be and want to do that kind of stuff.
Well, and I think some, a couple of you have mentioned the our roles as city council and as planning commission is they talk, but it's not dialogue. And I think that people would really like to have some dialogue. I realize there are problems that come with that. It's contentious.
Yes.
But just casual dialogue.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's brain works a little bit different, how they organize data and how they bring it and are able to process it in a group. And then the group speaks to the, you know, council or the planning commission because it's affecting their zone. And so there's lots of ideas because some people's brain just doesn't function that way. They don't organize. So I'm just putting out how my brain functions. That's all I can do.
Well, that's why we utilize we have our formal processes to try to cast a net, and then we have the various techniques that are ever evolving in the industry of community involvement and community development that and using those tools and being adaptive to different changing trends.
I just think it's easier to start at a little grassroots movement or little organizations at the size it is now. It's easier to kind of get that evolved. And then like it'll have people like you, Jeff, 20 years of knowing stuff. And that history is super valuable. Well, this is how we did it, and this is why we did it, and this is what came out of it, and this is why we changed. You know, that is all good stuff. It's good to know. No sense in repeating something that you've already worked through. And found out, well, it didn't work in that case, and this is why we changed. So you can see the history part really important.
I think the outreach thing, obviously you guys are doing a great job with,
yeah,
with the outreach.
Yeah, I was looking at that list.
The community's been more engaged the last 2 years than I've ever seen it. So
maybe we can see what Kathy has to say, our audience of one.
Oh.
You're hiding back here.
That way I didn't have to turn my head and watch this.
No, that's what we did.
Well, I have two things come to mind. Would you mind coming up to the microphone?
Just to get on the recording, not to have you at the podium necessarily.
Okay, so there were two things that came to mind, and the first thing I wrote down was the last conversation. And it's because it's really frustrating to come up here and stand and give ideas or give your point of view and get no feedback. And so then you feel like, and you wonder if anyone was really listening, you know, that's, and with that conversation, to use as an example, the UGB, it would be helpful to hear a conversation about between the commissioners or the council about their vision. So it's not just like, so people don't think that you're adding land without any thought or any vision of what it could look like. And so if you have that kind of a conversation, people need to be able to, I mean, it helps to hear it. I mean, that's one reason I come to the workshops, is because it's a chance to hear what you're thinking. And then I understand more what happens in the formal meeting. And then my other thing was that you get good community input with the long-term projects. But I think what happens is there's a disconnect, or there people don't understand. We worked on that comprehension plan, but then developments like Sunset Meadows comes in, and to the layperson, it seems like, well, you're not listening. We told you this is what we wanted in the comprehensive plan. But for you, you have to go by the codes. And I understand that now, that with Sunset Meadows, that one drove that lesson home. It's all about the codes. And somehow a conversation of getting the community so they understand that we have a vision, but our codes are the key. And so the people can come and they give all kinds of input, but if it doesn't fit the code, then you have to pass it. And I don't know what you do for that, but those were the two things that kind of popped up when I was listening to this
thing. So like you're talking about like more informal conversations to help people understand the process.
Yeah.
Like we've gone over and over trying to get the comprehensive plan and the codes to match better, because that, as you outlined, that's a big issue.
Yeah.
And then we're stuck. We can't do anything if the code doesn't match the comprehensive plan.
Okay, so somehow there has to be a way out of a code so that you have these rules, but they also have to be able to, you have to be flexible somehow to make it adapt to the situation. You know, so it's just not strictly about numbers. It's about the people who are actually living here and how that's going to impact their lives. And a code doesn't reflect that. I mean, a code is, it's hard
to. You have to be careful about being too subjective.
Yeah.
If you're subjective and then you say, you lean one way, one time, and then because somebody's really convincing, and then you do it another way at another time.
I know, it's hard. I don't envy you because you have, there's choices that you have to make and you have to go by the code. But on the flip side, we live here and it's going to impact our lives. And by the time that comes up, well, you don't have time to change the code just for that one instance. I don't know. But that was just my thoughts.
Thank you.
I think those were great input and I appreciate your public involvement here tonight and continued in the past and hopefully into the future. We often do fall back to, we have our development code and that's what any new or current application is reviewed against. I want to acknowledge that our comprehensive plan, which was adopted 2 years ago, we're just at the forefront of that process of implementing that comprehensive plan with any of our long-range planning or legislative processes are working towards implementing those policies. So maybe it's not a specific policy that we've targeted yet. It's an evolution in kind of codifying those policies that are in the comprehensive plan. So 20-year document, you know, we're kind of chipping away at it. And that's at what those priorities that either staff has identified or what city council has noted in a goal that you shall do this to bring a portion of the code into conformance with the comprehensive plan. So it's all an evolution. It's all fluid, but I look at the development code being more fluid as we implement those policies through code amendments. Just want to acknowledge that.
Thank you.
Well, I really heard that more informal communication between the people and planning commission, city council. I say city council. It sounds like that's something that would be important.
I just wanted to address, Kathy, one of your other comments. I can understand how it kind of seems like, you know, when you make public comment at the beginning of a council meeting and it's kind of like silence. You're like, okay, did they not hear me? Did they not agree with me? And I don't think that's necessarily the case when you have a council meeting. The public comments at the beginning of the meeting, you know, and it's not really designed to stop the whole meeting and start to have a conversation about, you know, that topic, but they do hear you. And oftentimes, and I know you do this sometimes, but stick around to the end of the meeting is when the council actually starts, can bring those topics up and have discussions and sometimes direction on public comment that comes up. So a lot of people aren't aware of that. And maybe that's something that the mayor needs to, and sometimes he does. He says, you know, we don't have time to talk about it now, but stick around because we may talk about it later. But there's obviously that sentiment out there that, you know, you felt that, I guess, you know, enough to come here and say, hey, it doesn't feel like I'm being listened to. So good feedback and something we'll share with the council. Same thing with the planning commission. Usually you guys can't stop and, you know,
stop at a public comment, stop a meeting that's got a agenda items on there and have a discussion about something that wasn't, you weren't expecting to discuss that night. But certainly those ideas start to germinate in your minds, and sometimes they're brought up later and result in some action. So, so don't give up hope.
Yeah, Kathy, we can assure you we
listen and we talk about it.
There's an empty chair, right?
Maybe a planning commission vacancy coming up.
Well, I don't want to continue the conversation much longer. I know that we're kind of closing in on the scheduled time for this meeting, but I, you know, what you've targeted is the planning commission and city council is more informal opportunities. What are those opportunities that, or techniques, suggestions that for staff to get the word out, you know, outside of our formal processes that we're limited to? I mean, we get invited to particular organizations to present or speak at a, on a topic. I mean, that's one of our more informal, but still a formal meeting. Are there other tools that we could or should be thinking about? And maybe not answers right now, but as you think about it, or you come across something like software, I mean, where can we as staff,
I was going to ask, how's our social media presence and connecting with some of the community groups?
I'd say our social media is underutilized, but also not very, I don't want to say it's not well received. It's not, you know, we don't get a lot of engagement on our social media. I remember we considered an Instagram a couple years ago, and we kind of did a pilot project with C4C on their Instagram, and we kind of collaborated with them on posting city content, their content, and we got some engagement, but not much better than what our city Facebook already had. And I'm tempted to share the video that I found, because it's a good way of, one, distributing information of what city projects and operations are, but also it sounds like building those relationships that people are wanting to know who that person is, what projects that they are directly working on, because building those relationships help kind of facilitate those more informal conversations, bring awareness that, oh, I could call that staff member and ask my questions and have an informal conversation. It doesn't have to happen in a public meeting. I could call them at my convenience.
Do you have videos like that on the website?
Not for us, but I have an example that I could pull up if you guys want to tolerate 60 seconds of it.
60 seconds? I'll do that.
As
just inside my attention span. Yeah.
So as she, well, I'll filibuster as she pulls it up. Just want to acknowledge or shed some light on, there's actually a good dovetail, is that the city's actively recruiting a deputy recorder and communications coordinator for just this, these topics. And so, you know, we're, you know, we'll have a professional, you know, dedicated to that, that outreach will come with some of those new techniques and tools and more, you know, structured outreach program or a point person. So stay tuned for that.
It sounds like the city's going to have a publicist.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what it needs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is a longer video. I'm only going to show the first little 60 seconds because it gives you the gist of what it is. Hopefully we can hear it. Oh, we can only hear it through my laptop.
Great. So on the top.
Let's do this.
Ryan, what is your role for the city's
Well, I've been with Sandy for 15 years, and my role has, you know, changed multiple times over that that timeline. Most recently, I was promoted to the Public Works Superintendent position in February of 2022. So the city has grown quite exponentially over the years, and we developed a need for this position to oversee some of the big projects we have going.
What are some of those big projects that are going on?
So yeah, we have multiple projects spanning multiple different departments right now. We have a large Capitol Street project, the Bell and 362nd extension, that's going to link the north side of town over to.
Okay, so I'll end at that there. But I think that's a nice way to introduce a staff member who is the expert on the projects and the things that they've been working on. And it's also a nice, friendly way to reach people at their home while they're just scrolling on their phone or the internet.
Just little YouTube videos of the different staff members?
Yeah. This is another planner with City of Sandy who did these, what is it called? Comedians getting coffee?
Comedians driving, getting coffee, driving cars.
Comedians driving Seinfeld cars, getting coffee. Seen
that? Seinfeld does it.
Yeah.
Seen that. And it's pretty funny.
Great.
But it's a nice informal way to interview people and share that. You know.
One mini multitude.
Yeah. Well, I did share this with Matt, and I went on a mountain bike trip and met a woman that does a lot of platform engagements, mostly with business, but she said this is great for public sector. It's called Thought Exchange, and it's just a way for people to do surveys, get information. The data can be compiled and looked at. I mean, it does a lot. I am now an expert on it for sure. But something like this, I think, could be really useful for the city because you can get on it anytime. And especially if you collaborate within your neighborhood and you talk about it and you refine it and you know what you want and you know what you need and you have ideas, you can apply all that onto a website like this that people can look at. And if you get a communications person, they can go through all that data and figure it out. What is it that people want? What are, you know, because bottom line is, you know, you want to do what is beneficial for the city as a whole, right? For everybody who lives here. But she explained it much better. And I haven't watched the product video because, and I'll probably end up doing it, but you know, they want to know your name. They want to know your phone number. They want to know, who are you? Where are you?
Da-da-da-da. They need you to sign up.
So you got to put all that in there. And I just wasn't ready to do that. But I probably will. But it's, you know, a good way to get information to where everybody can look at what other people have done and get on and read it. Go, oh, that's a good idea. I haven't seen that. So, you know, hopefully people get over some hurdles before they come to the meeting so they have ideas. You know, what have you done? What are your ideas? What can we work with? You know, and a knowledge base increases. That's part of it. I mean, is the knowledge base coming up to speed to how this process even works? I mean, geez, I was sitting in those first meetings going, I don't have a clue how this works. And Sunset Meadows was super enjoyable to get through that. Super enjoyable. And I'm like, man, this is like torture. And, but you know, you've got, there's that 20-year guy. He can be like the resource historian. It's good. But I think it's you know, we're asking citizenry, and I think citizenry wants it. They want to be knowledgeable. They want to be heard. They want to have input. They have ideas. And it's great to listen to them. Yeah. But there's a way to try to compile it. And maybe that's a tool for that.
Well, we're certainly going to we're trying to do more with our city website. I think we've started to expand the capabilities of it lately. Especially with the individual project websites that we've maintained to provide information to folks and keeping the record, keeping people updated on when the meetings are and the packets. And hopefully you find that useful. And we're constantly thinking of ways we can expand that. I think we're talking about a growth management page on the city website in advance of the urban growth boundary amendment discussion to kind of explain kind of some of the background, educate people on why this process is even being considered in the first place and what happens. So we hope to continue to make that a better and more useful tool for people to kind of as a go-to to help with the education. And that's something that's got a lot of potential, and maybe our communications director will be able to take it to the next level for us.
It'd be interesting to see what someone's already done. I mean, I know it, my husband's always saying, you refer everything to being a nurse. You can't keep doing that. But when I had to rewrite discharge instructions, because I did not think they were very good. And physicians were like, these are not very good. And so I was writing them and you had to do a lot of research. Well, Canada was the best research. Ottawa University, they had it down. They had it written. They had follow-up. They had everything. And it's like, well, you can just borrow it. I mean, if it works for you and it's good, man, let's do it. And so, I mean, you know.
There's no need to recreate the wheel, and there's no shame in there's no shame in stealing stuff when it's good. If you,
it's all toward a greater good. It's, you know, it's toward quality.
It's quality. If it's good, you know.
Well, you know, having it printed on the website is one thing, but I know that in business, like in the business, I'm retired from now, but little educational YouTube videos work really well for people that aren't going to sit there and read a full page of, this is how land use planning works, or this is why we have to look at the urban growth, because, you know, you need to look at the studies from Portland State, and why do you need to look at the video?
Eyes glaze over. Yes. Okay, I'm up for this.
And you do it in kind of an entertaining way. And you have something that somebody can click on and spend 5 minutes.
I think that's kind of what Emmy was showing those for, because I think that's an example of how you can bring it to life and make it more interesting.
The new medium is video communication.
Yeah.
Hands down. It needs to be less than 60 seconds.
Yeah.
I wasn't joking about my attention span.
You're right, though.
It is. I mean, that's how we do it in our business. It's how we communicate everything. And it's all pumped through social media. That's how the majority of at least the younger population communicates and where they get their information from. And it's the way it's going, whether you like it or not. It's just the way it is.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes, I mean, you know, I think that's all great and everything, and I know it's true. But once in a while, there's an issue that really requires a little bit more than 60 seconds.
Well, you just do multiple videos.
Take a break.
Well, we got to recognize our demographic here.
For sure.
I'll respond to the latest trends, but, you know, a lot of our demographic probably does not engage too much in social. Maybe does, but
even if they
still
get it off the
still
website,
does things the old-fashioned way too.
And the website, the city website, has different videos you could look at, you know, to explain things.
I think they want to walk up to a canopy at the quilt show, and it says "Planning Department, City of Sisters," and people want to ask you a question. That demographic, the young people who are living here are doing that, are going to find that stuff somewhere else, but the older group want to look you in the eye and say, what the hell's going on over there?
Yeah. Well, I think kind of the point of what we showed you is that there's multitude of ways that we need to get in touch with to get the word out. And there's no one easy medium to do it. It's a variety of, because everybody's getting their news a different way.
That could be a full-time job.
Well, that's why we're hiring a communications person.
1975 was when Tom McCall they voted in the land use.
73
was it 73? Yep. Yeah, so you know, it's been around a long time. It's kind of been here for a long time.
Still, Salem didn't do a very good job of communicating it either.
Yeah. Well, you know,
people don't understand.
I think they need a publicist.
Yeah, you do indeed. Because a lot of the objections we get and everything, people don't understand that whole process.
Yeah.
Well, I think the outreach is great that you guys are doing. So compliments to the job well done. We can always do better. But we also need to have the realistic expectation that there's going to be a large percentage of the citizenry that it just isn't going to pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And they're going to show up and they're not going to understand. And where they're not going to show up and they're still not going to understand. And you're always going to have a large group that just isn't engaged. And there's only so much you can do to get them to engage. It is to a degree on them to make sure, but I just want to make sure that we don't have this unrealistic idea that we're going to try to reach out and touch everybody and get everybody engaged. There's this. Yeah,
that's why it's like divide and conquer. Divide the group. Put them there. They have their little their representative that comes up and they disperse the information after they've gleaned it. They're the interested person that wants to read about it and know about it. And then they tell all their neighbors.
You'd be lucky if you get any districts for them, I think.
It's always been a challenge. And I mean, to the degree, remember when you and I did that covert interview with Jim over at the Nugget and Patrick found out about it and got so mad at us?
I forgot about that.
It was about just what the Planning Commission does, because we were having similar situations and that the public was disconnected with what our role was within the community. And I think Jim actually contacted us.
Yeah, he did.
Said, hey, we need to address this and put together something. Chris and I went over there and got interviewed.
And it was a very different
planning. We would never do that to you guys.
I mean, very different planning department. Right. You need to know that. Very different.
Anyway. Struggle is real.
Well, thank you for the input. This has been interesting, and we'll try to summarize this and share it with the council. Maybe I'll share it with you guys first to make sure that we heard what you guys actually said correctly, and then we'll share with the council. And I think there's some good stuff in there, stuff that the council needs to hear and stuff that we heard that we could take away. So hopefully found this exercise fruitful, and it's good. It's never a bad idea to talk about this kind of stuff. So I know a lot of communities that don't have these conversations, you know, that this gets glossed over a lot. So it's good to be able to talk and hear what we've heard today. So thank you.
What's happening in our next meeting, if I'm not jumping in?
So the next meeting is scheduled to hear the dark sky lighting ordinance for adoption. No more work sessions. It's go time. I think it's go time at least.
So we're going to have a hearing?
Hearing, yeah. Yep. So you'll get the packet for that a week before. So you'll get it next week. And there's been a lot of work that's been done on it, a lot of feedback from both you guys and the council and the community. So we're hopefully we got it this time. You'll let us know if we.
I was at Great Basin National Park and ran into a gentleman from Arkansas, University of Arkansas, who was teaching night photography for the state parks. And he was having a session there with a group of people coming in to take a picture of the Milky Way in the middle of the night for a week. And so we were kind of talking about this, and I said, told him what was going on here. And he said, who kind of introduced this? And I said, well, I think it was like a group of high school kids and their science teacher.
Astronomy.
And he said, we had that same thing in another community that I was involved in. I said, so how'd it work? He said, we asked for buy-in from the school district. And I said, what did that mean? And it was getting rid of their parking lot lights, turning off their security lights at a certain time at night. And they moved all of their outdoor athletic events to the afternoon. So there was no night lighting. And I said, wow, that is a big commitment. And he said, yes, but it was very important to the rest of the city to see that the school district was really adopting it. They were the ones that were saying, this is what we're going to do. And that's why they were kind of pushing the
city. Community was this?
I thought that was an interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Where?
I don't know where it was. Doesn't make any difference. It was just a city that wanted to be dark sky, and the same thing, the students.
That was their approach.
Were pushing it. And then so they just came to the city council and said, you know, the city, and said, we think it's important and we're willing to do this. Now that's a big thing to say, we're not having any evening athletic events. That's a big buy-in from the school district.
That's a major concession.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not sure that would occur here.
It would.
It occurred somewhere else.
It occurred somewhere else.
Yeah, so they probably didn't have
the facility. I ran the ordinance by the facilities director for the school, and he was a little pushing back a little bit on some of the requirements. Sensitive to obviously just to security and safety, and having the required amount of lighting for security cameras and stuff, which is a valid thing. But that's very interesting to hear. The biggest kind of change is that is getting the council to support the potential changes to the public lighting here. That was a big threshold discussion we had at the council last week is, whether we want to, if we want to continue to pursue our dark sky certification, the public lighting has to be on board with making changes within 5 years. And our lighting downtown is the one part of our public lighting that's not in conformance and would potentially scuttle that certification. And we thought that might be a kind of a decision point for the council to say, okay, well, maybe we don't want to go that far. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly enough, they said, hey, this is something that we really want. We think sisters should go after this, and we're willing to put the money where our mouth is on this. So that was a interesting conversation and good to hear that as you guys have mentioned a lot, that the public has to put their, if we're asking the private side to conform, we need to have the public side conform too. So that was huge.
Our institutions could lead by example.
Yeah.
What a concept.
Well, they're trying to be sensitive to, the cost of the taxpayers that it would involve, but I think they see the benefit overall to the community worth that effort and worth that cost. So.
Was Public Works able to determine a cost associated with that? That was one of our requests.
Yeah, we were able to get some cost estimates on changing out the fixture for all those lights. And there's 26 of them out there. So the estimate was that it would be about $100,000 to change them out to a that we were hopeful that that we could make some more low-tech, low-cost adjustments to those lights to make them conform. And Public Works has gone out and actually put some kind of tape along the outside of the those fixtures to cut down on the glare. And it's really worked to cut down on the glare. Rima, who the astronomy teacher, has always been really critical of those lights. And she even complimented that those changes that they made addressed a lot of her concern. But unfortunately, because they, in order to get the dark sky certification, they have to be fully shielded lights. And even though the light source is kind of up in the top there, because they're not completely opaque panels on the side, there is some diffusion of that light upwards. And according to our dark sky consultant, that precluded it from calling it fully shielded. You could, but then there's some people talked about painting them all black, but there's a piece on the bottom that is opaque. So if you covered the sides, there would be no light getting out at all.
So $100,000 over 5 years is only $25,000 a year. And that's not, that's not astronomical for a city.
20,000.
25, yes.
20.
Whatever. 20. 20. 4 years. There's a contingency plan in there in case something breaks.
Maybe the astronomy club can do a bake sale or something.
Yeah.
There you go.
So you'll see that coming up. And then November 8th next week is council's going to have a discussion on what they want to do with the information about the UGB report, if they want to direct staff to go forward with a UGB amendment or not.
I thought that was a good joint meeting.
Good. Yeah, good education, a lot of education.
I wish we could do more.
There. In terms of the interaction with the council?
Yeah, it's interesting just getting their take and seeing their level of knowledge and understanding of the land use issues. And I just felt like it was beneficial.
Something we should try to do every year. And then just to kind of close the loop on the Brunchy's appeal, it went to council, and council, I don't know if you heard that, but council upheld Planning Commission's decision, which upheld staff's decision. And as far as, I think it's past the timeline for appeal to LUBA, which we were concerned that there's going to be a potential date, but I think that date's passed, 21 days. So just wanted to close the loop with that, with you guys on that one, since you spent some time on it. Anything else, staff updates you guys have?
Not today. Anything else from the commission? All right. Meeting adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
You good?
Yeah.